We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Football Report. I'm Blair Andrews, as always, with my co-host, Hassan Rahim. Hassan, how's it going?
You know, living the dream. Still in recovery, but, you know, it is what it is. Back injuries suck. But I'm super excited to run it back with one of our favorite guests.
Absolutely. You know him from his work on stat chasing and erstwhile at RotoViz. Now, hopefully we'll get him back in the off season, but Connor O'Driscoll, how's it going?
I've written articles for RotoViz this year.
I just mean not in season stuff, but that's all right.
It's interesting because I think the last time I was on the report was literally like two or three days after your surgery, Hassan, right?
Yeah. Yep. It's been a while, man. It's been a long road.
I remember you were horizontal, like
yeah.
You're in severe pain. I'm sure you're still in pain, but hopefully a little less.
Yeah, it's the fun part is because it was a deep herniation, so they were like, just be careful to not re-herniate it, and that's what happened, which is a good time. Luckily. I mean, I'm able to sit for a while, but it's better than just being fully horizontal. But like, there's still a lot of horizontality in my life, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
There's been almost no walking, like none of the PT stuff. So we're starting a whole bunch of other things. So it's just, it sucks.
So you started PT?
Finally. Yeah. After like
nice
weeks. But, you know, there's still a threat of a second surgery. So I'm trying to take this PT stuff as seriously as I can because it took a while to like, they were like, no, you have to take it slowly. So I was like, all right, I'll take it as slow as I can. This is a bit of a watch party / sweating some of our teams. Zay Flowers, for those of you who are going to be listening to this later, he just scored a touchdown. So Trico, how much Zay Flowers do you have? Do you have a lot of Lamar? What do you need as the regular season for a lot of these tournament best ball leagues start winding down?
So I've got 11 teams right now who are set to advance in the FFPC. And I actually I just sort of pulled it into ownership of those teams. And unfortunately, I've zero Zay Flowers in my advancing teams right now. Yeah. Best ball teams on FFPC, yeah.
Yeah.
So no Lamar, no Zay Flowers, unfortunately. I think that some of that is just randomness of which teams advance, who you sort of paired them with. I do have three Rashad Bateman teams, two Odell Beckham teams. So they're who I'm rooting for.
As of right now, Odell's had three targets, caught all three for 34 yards. It's actually kind of, I think the Mark Andrews injury is very, very sad. but it does open up a ton of opportunity for Odell, right? He seems to be the key beneficiary off that injury. Although, you know, everyone keeps talking about likely, I really think it is OBJ, right?
Yeah, they seem to be determined already to get Odell involved. I remember that even before the injury, there was games and plays where they seemed to be going to him on purpose because they want him involved. That sort of makes sense. I don't know if it's just going to consolidate to Odell, but I guess it does seem like he is getting a lot. He does seem to be the main target now.
Yeah, yeah. And I was kind of hoping that they would have been turning stuff over to Zay Flowers. But I guess realistically, they've got the kind of archetype. Realistically, like, it's sad to say this, but like, it's almost like they need Rashad Bateman, like the player, to just come alive and be who we thought he was.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, the offense needs that spark.
Yeah. And that kind of archetype, right? Because like Isaiah Likely, unfortunately, at least to me, he's just never that guy. But like Bateman's got the type. Like he's a bigger burner. And he's a bigger target than Odell and Zay Flowers. I mean, those are like Odell is, how tall is Odell Beckham? He's like 5'11", right?
He's in that roughly 5'11".
Yeah, he's 5'11". I think Zay is a little shorter than that. Zay is. He's like 5'10 or 5'9, something ridiculous. Yeah, he's 5'9. So Zay Flowers at 5'9. I think Rashad Bateman 6'2.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, with my point behind all of these guys, yeah, 6'1, 6'2. Like my point behind these guys in the heights is like you want to have that big bodied receiver in the end zone, at least as a target for Lamar, because they don't have that right now, right? Like with Mark Andrews going down and
I think Odell sort of right now at this stage in his career profiles is sort of like the solid player. Like he's a veteran, like he's more likely to get the route right, like to have the timing and stuff like that, but he's not ripping off big plays.
Yeah. Where and
we've seen that Bateman can do that. And they do. Well, honestly, their offense has been turning, it's been doing well, but that would be a big benefit to them. I agree. In the passing game,
just as a surprise, it looked like Keaton Mitchell got the start on this tonight. As of right now, Justice Hill and Mitchell have like 3 carries apiece, with Gus Edwards only having the 1. I was curious about like, do you have any Keaton Mitchell takes? Do you have him in any of your FFPC MEs anywhere as a waiver wire ad?
I have not, unfortunately, not been on the Keaton Mitchell train. Don't really have him anywhere. I don't have enough managed stuff for that to be like a real statement. And then he wasn't really like, he was too deep to be a best ball target.
Right.
I thought when Keaton Mania was sort of when he had those 1 or 2 big weeks on the low touch count and low snap count, I thought that the Ravens backfield, it's not really a very valuable backfield because you have Lamar there. There's not that many goal line carries. There's not that many targets to running backs. It seems to me like a very split 3 ways backfield. And that's a really tough target, especially when even on great efficiency, that's tough because there's just not a lot of ways for you to win there. I guess there was hesitancy from me there, but he seems to be an excellent player. He seems to have a really strong start to his NFL career, and could totally at this point with him getting the first carry and all that sort of stuff, he could totally be a 60 to 70% like sort of snap share guy down the stretch. Like that seems really reasonable to me.
Yeah, and I do like your point about like how the Ravens' backfield isn't particularly valuable, right? Like, I mean, here we are all sitting with J.K. Dobbins exposure at some level, and that's been a shame. But like, what it took for Keaton Mitchell to emerge was like a Dobbins injury, and then Gus Edwards to be like not Justice Hill to not really be all there. Gus Edwards to kind of like them realize that they needed more explosion. Like, it took a lot for Keaton Mitchell to finally emerge, right? Like, you just cannot target him in 18 rounders. Like, maybe if you're playing NFFC 14, like those the deep 14 team 30 for everyone drafts like 35 players or whatever it is, right? Like then it's a different story. But
I did see something pretty crazy the other day that before week 12 started, Gus Edwards was like the number 5 running back.
Yeah,
in PPR, which was pretty insane. I think a lot of that is just touchdown luck and sort of like big play luck. But I thought that was nuts.
I agree with you. Actually, I wanted to drill down on the point you made about the backfield not being particularly valuable because there's another
thing
that reminds me of, right? So it's Josh Allen who completed 29 and 51 passes for 339 yards, 2 scores, and 1 int. Right, he was like this was kind of one of like a vintage Josh Allen game, right? Like he had 2 big rushing touchdowns, like one on the from 9 yards and then one from 16 yards, right? And he also found Gabe Davis for a long passing touchdown. But like you know, kind of to your point, like you know, with Josh Allen doing this, like where would you be drafting James Cook next season? And where do you think? And like, where do you draft? I guess Josh Allen, because this year, you know, I don't know if he's going to pay off that QB1 draft slot, but I'm curious, what are you going to do with that or like the elite QB tier next year in terms of best ball?
So the first question is on what do I think James Cook, like you're asking what do I think his sort of efficient ADP should be next year?
Where do you think he should go? Like what's his ADP next year in your opinion?
I think he's probably somewhere, and maybe this is too harsh, but I think he's somewhere around 8 or 9. And maybe that's too harsh. But I think that there's like a bunch of signal in how he's been used this year, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. But when you have people like Latavius Murray and that sort of player, are consistently getting the goal line work ahead of them. Like, to me, that means that, let's say Harris and Murray aren't on the team next year. I know that very often people would react like that. Oh, listen, goal line work, open up. But the fact that those are very replaceable names. Yeah. Like, I think next year's Latavius Murray will still get the it might not be Latavius Murray, but some... another player like him will consistently get that goal line work over him.
Right. Yeah.
And
there will be, yeah, and then there's Josh Allen, right?
And I get maybe 8 or 9 is too conservative, but to me I feel like when you take a running back, you're taking a bigger risk than any other sort of position. So you sort of do want some cushion in there for them to really, really smash. And like, I think that 8 round is a pick where James Cook can like totally, like completely bury that. But I think when you get into 6th or 7th, that's just too expensive, I think.
Yeah, that's a little bit cheaper than he was this year. But I mean, I think if you're going in thinking 7th round is a value because this guy's going to smash, I mean, that was the thesis going into this season, and we haven't quite seen it yet. So I do think that it makes sense for drafters to be a little conservative with Cook for a lot of the reasons you mentioned. I mean, you know, when you said 8th or 9th, like my initial reaction was like, wow, that's way too cheap. I'd be all over him at that price. But I mean, considering, how he hasn't been able to pull away from Murray, Maybe I'm too optimistic.
Or at least and now you've got Ty Johnson in the mix.
I'm like, that's the price, 8 round. That's the price where I'm happy to draft James Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that we do need to balance this with is that there is a good class of incoming, well, as of right now, rookie running backs are going to be declaring, right? Like, I think that is an added wrench that we need to be considering in that.
It's a risk factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've seen day 2 picks at running back. They have like okay year 1s and 2s. And then if a team is the type of team that takes running backs early, which it seems like the Bills are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then that's an additional risk that especially and the February drafts, which is sort of like your first bite at 2024 action, is a big consideration.
Right.
Yeah, and to be clear, this is what we're talking about, because like once, I mean, everything gets shaken up after the draft, right? But like, I think you do need to draft when you're drafting in the, as you mentioned, in the February drafts. You have to think about stuff like this.
Right.
I mean, like James Cook's biggest saving grace is the fact that he sees a lot of work through the receiving game, right? 7 targets today, caught 6 of those for 57 yards, no scores. But, you know, again, it makes him a threat this season. It just gives me some pause as to where you're drafting him next year, right? And I have a weird feeling that when those Feb drafts open, we're going to be seeing James Cook like in the 6th round or 5th round, just because people will want the starting running back on a high powered offense.
Right. Yeah. You always have the offense. So go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, especially if Murray is gone and it looks like that competition is not there, I think people will kind of forget that Murray was just, you know, he was just a guy that they got off the street.
Right. Yeah. People do love, they, it feels very comfortable, it seems like, to sort of target the offenses where you can reliably predict will score points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to go back to a question about the Ravens, I'm starting to get a little bit disappointed about Zay Flowers in sort of recent weeks, relative to the sort of offseason hype, relative to the early season production. Like, it doesn't feel like it's been there.
No. If anything, they've like reduced his role. Isaiah Likely, for anyone listed following, he's now got 4 targets, got 3 of those with 36 yards, right? But yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. Like, when you look at Zay Flowers' early season production here, they're not even using him. Like, it feels like the splash plays aren't there anymore, right? Like, even like just last week against Cleveland, you know, 6 targets, caught 5 of them, 73 yards, right? But it's been so up and down, right? Like, against Arizona a few weeks ago, 7 targets, 5 catches, 19 yards. Like, what is that? In your opinion, Connor, like, I mean, like, and this is like, again, like you said, like compared to his early, before the London games, right? Like started for him.
Right.
You had like his first week, 10 targets, 9 catches, 78 yards, right? Then the next one, 5 targets, 4 catches, 62 yards, 10 targets, 8 catches, 48, right? Like where have these numbers gone?
I'm sort of trying to answer my own question now. Like, how disappointing is it really that it's sort of tailed off? And just looking at his game logs on the road of his Stat Explorer. So he had 48% target share in week one, and clearly that's just unrealistic to sustain. But it is pretty apparent that in terms of like market share of the targets, he's still been pretty high. Like week 3 was 33%, week 4 24% target share, week 5 29%, week 6 29%, week 8 it was a 27% share, week 10 27% share. And these are like week 8, for example, against the Browns, 27% target share on a 16-yard air yards per target. So I guess to me that sort of suggests that the Ravens offense has been the problem, in that they go up by so many scores, they've been so dominant, and then they take their foot off the gas, that's been the problem. That it's not really his market share of the offense. It's that even though and I definitely expected it to be a more pass heavy offense this year. Even though it felt like that, it just hasn't materialized because I think game script, but I think that's worth checking as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I just pulled up the receiving EP numbers, and you can kind of see how that's trailed off a lot. Where you're you know, expecting only around 10 points from him most weeks.
Right.
I mean, if he finishes the season, he's up to like what is it, 588 yards. And, well, he just got another touchdown. So two touchdowns he's got. So if he finishes at like 804 or something, I mean, for a rookie, that's not bad. Where would you have him next year?
So, and just on my own question in terms of game script for the Ravens. So the Ravens had true week one through 12, had 380 offensive plays where they've been by ahead by a touchdown or more. And that's more than half their offensive snaps, which is just 728. And so that's pretty insane. That, like, I think they're a good team, but I don't know if they're so good that you should expect their over 50% of their offensive snaps to be winning by where they're ahead by more than a touchdown. And so, yeah. With that being said, and I see that they have like a 50 overall on the season, they have a 50-50 pass rush split. And if I know we sort of looked at the situation neutral stuff and 2 years ago where situation neutral pass rate actually wasn't that valuable. So I think that the sort of signal from, and I'm just sort of thinking through it myself, the signal from the season is that maybe we got a little bit too ahead of ourselves in thinking that Baltimore, we're going to open it up with the passing game. That it's still very much a run heavy team. And with that, but having said that, Zay Flowers is still a fairly dominant target earner. And going in as a second year player, I think he should probably be going. Where was what's his name, Drake London, going this year?
I think he was going around like the late fourth, early fifth.
I think probably a little bit ahead of there is where Zay Flowers should go.
That's my thought too, like mid fourth, right?
Yeah.
And obviously I'm using an anchor there that but it feels like it's similar to the Drake London scenario where you're probably not gonna get a lot of pass attempts, but it's a talented second year player who's played well. His football has been good. So they're I guess we've come full circle from getting very concerned to like you look at the numbers, actually, you know, he's played well.
Yeah, I mean go ahead.
I want you to go. You go first.
Well, I was just thinking that when you put it in those terms, like, you know, you could have some people saying, oh, we tried this with Drake London last year. Good player on a bad offense. Or actually, it's not even on a bad offense because Atlanta is a little bit different because they don't pass, but they also don't
score actually points. A bad offense.
Whereas Baltimore, you know, we saw like just in this game, they got really close and they gave Justice Hill a couple carries before finally throwing the pass to Flowers to get him a touchdown right at the goal line. So there maybe is a little bit more scoring upside in this offense compared to Atlanta. But seeing how London has done this year at a fifth round cost maybe has people a little bit shyer about Flowers, who I think wasn't as exciting a prospect necessarily to begin with. So perhaps coming in with a little bit lower expectation anyway.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It is almost the end of 2023. We are coming up to the holiday season. I, for one, am very excited about the holidays as they approach. But it can be a time of the year where you may struggle with seasonal blues. It can be a wonderful time, but it can also be a challenging time. But adding something new and positive to your life can counteract some of those feelings. Therapy can be a bright spot amid the stress and change, something to look forward to make you feel grounded, give you the tools to manage everything going on. 2023 was the first year that I tried therapy. I started in early 2023 and have continued throughout. It's helped me to learn positive coping skills, to help me work through the process on a day-to-day basis, and to help me process some life events. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched to a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your bright spot this season with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/rotoviz today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/rotoviz.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, it's not like he is as exciting as someone who Cobra Kai is talking about in the chat here, right? Like, Jordan Addison, right? Like, and he thinks Jordan Addison or Tank Dell should be going in round two. I don't know if that's like, that feels a little rich to me, but what helps Zay Flowers' bull case is the fact that there will be no more OBJ, right? Next season. OBJ is on a 1-year contract, but then here's the flip side is we shouldn't be double counting that because right now he's doing fine and he's probably going to have a reasonable end of stretch to end out the season, but he doesn't have Mark Andrews to contend with. He takes up a pretty big chunk on this offense, right? So, like, how high, like true value, like, yeah. And then Cobra Kai makes a good point. Like, are we sure OBJ will not be brought back in 2024? We don't know that yet. We don't know what negotiations are going to look like. It did take a while for them to happen, but when we start drafting again in February, like, these are the things that we should be at least thinking about a little bit, because we're going to be committing capital to, you know, making or figuring out what's happening with these guys. And that's kind of a bit of the game, right? Like, Drake London today, just for what it's worth, had a, I hate, like, I don't know about you guys, but like every time it flipped on the Saints, the red zone flipped on Saints Falcons, it felt like a comedy of errors was happening on the field. I don't know if you guys got the same feeling, but
rough day for the offenses.
I mean, Carr still threw for 304 yards, and he's really putting a damper on my season long under on him. But Drake London, 7 targets today, caught 5 of those for 91 yards. He has to be hyper efficient for that type of stuff, right? The guy I really want to talk about was Bijan, 16 carries, 91 yards, and a score. Also saw 6 targets, 3 receptions, and 32 yards and a score. Last week we had Packer in on, and you know, he was saying that, like, you can see Bijan going as a top 5 pick or a top 3 pick. Dricko, like, how high is too high for Bijan next offseason?
I have sort of changed my tact a little bit when it comes to Arthur Smith. I've always been on the mindset where, or especially last year, sort of the mindset where people put too much stock into the coaching stuff and they overanalyze it. They try to overpredict, but, and maybe I'm reading too much into sort of like one season result, but it's truly felt like And Arthur Smith is a true outlier in terms of his coaching stuff, in that his stuff, the stuff he does just doesn't make any sense. Like, it'd be one thing, like, just take Kyle Pitts, for example. It'd be one thing if, you know, he was, like, high route share, high ADOT, high air yards, market share. All those sort of arguments made sense for him going into the year. But then when they started cutting him off in terms of routes, when they start, like, when the Bijan usage, it doesn't make as much sense anymore, where they seem determined to get these two other guys involved. And today was probably fine because they were still using him around the goal line, but the sort of weird, the non-logical rotation of it, it's thrown me off a little bit, where I'm sort of thinking, like, I think there's a pretty good chance that Arthur Smith is, like, an outlier head coach, and that even though the stars on his team are so good, that you need him to get fired for those players to return the high draft capital. Like, don't get me wrong, I think if Bijan is, like, second round next year or like 2-3 turn, like, I still think that's, like, at a cost where more than justifies the risk. But I think you need a pretty hefty Arthur Smith discount on Falcons players, which I wasn't. I knew that you needed that, but, like, a special discount for Arthur Smith, like, more so than other weird coaches or bad coaches.
I think sorry.
No. Did I answer your question? I was like, yes, I did. After all that, I did answer your question.
I think that makes sense. I don't see a scenario in which Bijan is not a first rounder next year. Although, when you look at sort of his profile, just pulling up his weekly or his NFL Stat Explorer page, there is definitely, like, a lack of ceiling. Like, 21.2 points in week two. You know, before today, he really hadn't. He hadn't done anything better than that. So,
you want to talk about lack of ceiling, dude? Like, pull up Kyle Pitts or Drake London, right?
Well,
like,
I know, but we're talking about a guy who's potentially competing for a top five pick and probably could get there just based on like the hype. So, you know, I think Bijan does, like, he's talented enough to have that ceiling, obviously. But with the Arthur Smith stuff, you definitely want to be cautious.
Does he have a realistic chance at, like, a legendary season is the question.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's just
he should
but I mean, my mind says no, but my heart says yes. Right, like, I think that's what makes it so hard, right? Is that logically, that's the concern that you have, I guess.
Like, he should be getting a bunch of targets. He should be getting a bunch of goal line work. He's a special player. And he should, like, by his talent, he should be a first round pick. There's no question to me that he should be a first round pick. And again, maybe I'm just being too cautious and conservative on a run because he's a running back. But the sort of, like, pathway, like, what is the pathway to that legendary season? Is it, like, Arthur Smith all of a sudden goes, oh geez, like, all the things I did last year, I was just dead wrong. Like, I just changed my mind.
I think it has to be a coaching change, right?
Yeah. Has to be. And are you gonna make somebody a first round pick in based on a hope that the coach gets fired? That doesn't feel right to me.
No, right. I mean, you can't do that. Because I thought we'd have five running backs to start with, like, at least next year, right? And I was thinking it would be CMC 101, and then it'd be, like, Bijan 102, and then probably, like, Jonathan Taylor 103, and then, like, Gibbs 104, and I can't figure out who the 105 would be. Probably yeah. Justin Jefferson or running back, right? But like, the more you
go, there wasn't that many running backs in the first round this year, right?
Yeah,
it was CMC, it was Bijan, it was Eckler, and I think that was it.
That was it. Before. Yeah,
and so with how the season has worked out for running backs, I could see that actually being less.
Yeah, that's what Cobra Kai was just saying in the chat, in that like we've got Raheem Mostert, Rashad White, Brian Robinson, all those like top eight running backs. Like, what's right. the point?
Yeah, none of those guys are even sniffing early round draft
capital. Right. So, and you can
you've got a trend of running backs going later, and the actual seasonal results to me do nothing to like arrest that.
Yeah, because next year you can just take Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. Like there's been, despite all like the quarterback injuries and the receiver injuries, like there's nothing that should at least erase the fact that they were having lights out seasons, right? Like Justin Jefferson was un fuego until he got hurt. Today, right. Ja'Marr Chase almost single-handedly won the game for the Bengals. Right. He was Ja'Marr Chase was somehow everywhere. Like every time a ball would hit off a Steelers defender's hands, it should have been picked off. Ja'Marr Chase was there for the rebound somehow. I don't know if you guys watched that. And this was coming in at with Kenny Pickett, who, you know, he had 278 scoreless yards, completed 24 of 33 passes. I think this was the first time in like 2.5 years or a fairly long time that the Steelers actually had more than 400 total yards of offense in a game. That we'll see if that continues, but I just talking about how some of these guys are, or at least some of the elite receivers, like I don't know how you can take them like after CMC, right? Like, do you think it's still Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase? Do you think the top three are still going to be the top three the way they were? Or do you think there's going to be,
Cup is the guy who falls out.
Sorry, Cup? Yeah, Cup is a guy who definitely, he definitely falls out.
I don't think Justin Jefferson or Chase's ADP changes at all.
Do you think?
Go ahead.
No, the other guy who was being drafted, like he saw a lot of destruction in his draft. So this was a guy who was going at the 1-2 turn, if I recall correctly, when drafts opened in February, and he only saw a backslide. Ramondre Stevenson. Right, he rushed 21 times for 98 yards today. He also had 5 catches for 9 yards. He's pretty much like their offense right now, him and Demario Douglas. Right, he also scored a lone touchdown.
He's bordering on sort of like being a dead zone guy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like that's where he's going to go next year, I think. Right. Yeah, like, he's a guy who was like. He's the guy who you like, the kind of archetype you want to avoid, right? They all like when you're drafting in February, they just have this buku high ADP, and then it just goes backwards. Like if you were drafting in Feb, all you did was watch your 1-2 turn Stevenson turn into 5-6 turn Stevenson, and you're like,
right. He turns 26 in February.
Yeah,
so he's not old, but that's definitely on the border of when it's like, okay, he's on watch to hit the cliff, and it definitely felt like he's hit a cliff at points this year.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up box score today
for Stevenson.
Yeah,
that's on me.
I was thinking about it. It's definitely difficult to fill out the first round. For next year, because I can see CeeDee Lamb and Amon-Ra, like you saw Amon-Ra in the main event drafts that happened after Thursday night, he was firmly mid first round, and I think you can probably plug him in to mid to late first round next year.
And I think it's him in mid, dude. I think he's definitely in the mid first round. Like you can see it go CMC, like this probably goes against what we discussed last week with Pat, which I'm actually hoping is how it works out. But You can see a world where we see CMC 101, Justin Jefferson 102, Ja'Marr Chase 103, CeeDee Lamb 104, Tyreek Hill 105, Amon-Ra St. Brown 106. Like, you can see that. You can see that opening.
Right. And it's probably hard to guess the exact order.
Yeah.
But generally, that's what it feels like it'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing that kind of is interesting is to think about, I mean, because everybody's still, I believe, looking for kind of the next CMC, the next running back that could do, you know, the 400-point thing. So you might see guys like Jahmyr Gibbs moving up into the early first.
Yeah, I like that.
Trying to think of who else could really make a big jump like that.
I think there is one. ETN could be like one-two turn.
ETN could, but like, how high can you really take him? He's sort of been a little disappointing in the run game.
Right. Well, they've started using Darnus Johnson a lot more.
Yeah, he's
not a workhorse anymore. Which he definitely opened the season as a workhorse, but not anymore.
No. Yeah. Because Ben Gretsch pointed it out in Stealing Signals, and then I think Bakarin reiterated it in Legendary Upside. But like,
I mean, I guess if Kyren Williams continues having more games like the one he did.
He doesn't have
the profile to fit that, but I still think, you know, based on just his performance and
he could be a third or fourth round pick in February.
Yeah,
for sure.
Rushing 16 times, 143 yards and a score, 6 catches, 61 yards and another touchdown, almost 40 PPR points.
Yeah,
just nuts, man.
Where do you think he'll end up in February?
I kind of think he's probably a 2-3 turn, maybe sliding even into the mid-second. Right. Yeah.
Like, that's where Leonard Fournette was going the year after they won the Super Bowl. 2-3 turn.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it.
The question is, will the Rams draft someone? What are the Rams draft picks next year?
They have a ham sandwich.
They probably do. They only have their fifth round pick. No, they had their first round pick in 2024.
Kobe Kai makes a good point. In February, they won't have any. He won't have any competition, so it might even be earlier in February until they sign someone or possibly draft someone.
I think. I think if is a big, because I mean, like, the whole thing is that Kyren has done really, really good work, right? Like, could you pull up his Stat Explorer?
I guess just to. Maybe be a bit more of a bear. Going into the year, they weren't planning on it wasn't their intention to give Kyren this sort of usage. They had been intending to split it between him and Cam Akers, and then they had a falling out with Cam Akers.
Oh yeah.
And so to me, like, the idea that they will plan to give Kyren this sort of usage going into next year, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I mean, even coming into the game, when you look at, for instance, his expected points, there's not a really, well, okay, it was actually pretty good in the beginning of the year, but starting to trail off, like 9.4 in week 5, 12.4 week 6. He obviously got hurt that week, and we don't have the numbers for today yet, but
that was his, like, expected points. Like, pull up his actual PPR. Like, look at his actual, like.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, most weeks he destroyed that.
Yeah, he outkicked his coverage like ridiculously against Arizona last time out, and he just came like right out of hibernation and did it again. He literally went on IR, just like seething to come back 6 weeks later and just like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. Bryce Ridley in the chat asks, is the Adam Thielen train over? Yeah, I think it might just be over, bro. Pull up Adam Thielen, because he had another stinker today. He's not on our show sheet. I'll pull up his stat line real quick. Where'd it go? There they are. Man, I mean, I think it's all over right now. Actually, this is probably a good question for Connor. Connor, Bryce Young, definitely fast today. He had 3 carries, 23 yards on the ground. Somehow they're not really calling any design runs for him. Adam Thielen saw only 3 targets today, 1 catch for 2 yards. And then also, if you look at his stat explorer, he has, since the bye week, he's noticeably trailed off. I wanted to get your take on the Panthers' offense sort of next year. Like, where do you think these guys are going to be going? And do you believe, like, are you going to buy any sort of dip on Bryce Young?
So, Bryce Young was already, I think he was very cheap this year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's probably undraftable and borderline undraftable in 1QB stuff. But
oh shoot.
When I say undraftable, mm-hmm. sorry, I think he's probably like a 16th to 18th round pick as okay. a QB in 1QB stuff.
So viable on DraftKings, but not a guy who you want to be wasting roster spots on an Underdog or FFPC.
Yeah, like he's probably profiles somebody as like definitely a hey, I missed all my stacks, you know, I can get Carolina players cheap, let me just give it a go. But nobody's gonna feel good about that. Like, the offense has been bad, he hasn't played well. I think I'll probably be more interested in him in Superflex, and I think that I'm hoping that the stink on him means that the guys that you draft him around, he's just going to outproject. So that's the only way that I'd be sort of interested in Bryce. But I don't think he's shown enough for you to take. Like, when you're taking a quarterback in single QB, you're sort of like you're taking a risk there, because even if it pays off and it works out, they can only play in one spot. So your upside is really capped. So if you're using roster spots on a more marginal guy, and it feels unlikely that they're going to hit any kind of ceiling, then I think that's pretty tough. But yeah. On Superflex, the risk is gone away, because you can use them in the second spot, and even those 14-point weeks, they still matter. Whereas the 14-point weeks in 1QB is almost irrelevant.
Yeah, especially when you have guys like Dak and Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts putting up 40 as a ceiling, right? Cobra Kai, let's be real. Bryce Young is Zach Wilson, NFC South. hey, look. He is like the Peyton Manning of the S2 cognition test, though. I'll tell you that. right now.
I just pulled up the Advanced Stat Explorer, because it's kind of funny to look at Young's numbers. He's got 62% on target throw percentage, which is the lowest of any kind of.
It's crazy to see Deshaun Watson down there. So crazy to see Deshaun Watson down there.
The thing to look at is this ADOT number, because Bryce Young attempting passes 5.6 yards downfield, whereas everyone else on this list is like 7 or 8. Even Zach Wilson is throwing further downfield and throwing more accurate passes than Young. So, you know, the other thing I noticed in his NFL Stat Explorer page is that he hasn't had a game yet with positive efficiency. And at first I was thinking, you know, how much of that is Young's fault and how much is just that he really doesn't have that many guys to throw to. But some of these advanced quarterback stats do seem to isolate kind of the quarterback's skill a little bit better than others, and it doesn't look good.
Right. Is low on target, low ADOT.
Right.
Is not good, because that there's just no good way to spin that.
Short passes thrown inaccurately. Not a good recipe.
Somehow that's worked. That's worse than Zach Wilson. Amazing.
Yeah.
Just what a player, man. Like, I don't know what to expect out of this offense, because apparently Frank Reich is on the lava seat, if you will. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if we wake up tomorrow and he is. I think the Panthers would have decided that they've seen enough. now, you know, now you're getting, I wonder what the story of the season written would be, but especially because they traded up for Bryce Young, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm not sure what to make of that. I did want to touch on a guy who had a massive breakout today. Rashee Rice, he got 8 of 10 targets for 177 yards and a score. We sat him in our FFPC main event after getting burned by him last week, but I guess we shouldn't have. He led the team today in targets, catches, and receiving yardage. I think the signal in this game was that he dropped 2 passes early, but most of his production came after those 2 drop passes, right? So I guess it shows intuitively that, like, the coaching staff, 1, trusts Rice, but 2, also recognizes their lack of talent in their receiver core, right? So I guess, Connor, what are your expectations for this guy rest of the season? And, you know, depending on his end, like, where, how he finishes the season, like, do you think he's going to be overdrafted as we start next year?
Overdrafted?
Yeah. Well, just because I can see people shying away from Travis Kelce because of his age, right? So I guess the way I would say it would be both Kelce and Rashee Rice are going back-to-back in the mid-second. Well, Kelce goes mid-second, and then Rice goes mid-third, right? So I don't know if that's an overdraft or not, in your opinion.
So say that again. Just the last sentence.
Yeah, so Kelce going mid-second, Rashee Rice going mid-third next year.
Mid-third. I would honestly be shocked if he was mid-third round next year, just given his points. But I was encouraged by today, where Rashee Rice, he was second on I'm looking at the PFF, just because this is one where I think it's important. He was second on the team in offensive snaps for receiving weapons, next to only Travis Kelce. So he had more. So to me, that's a big step in the right direction, where he's leading the wide receivers in snaps and routes. Whereas his big problem before was that he was wildly efficient on per route data, but they just weren't playing him. And so you had the comments. I think it wasn't a quote, it was like a report where the Chiefs had said they'd done some self-scouting over a long week, and they said, okay, we got to get our playmakers in on the field more and in better situations, positions. And then you had some injuries. And so to me, it's pretty – I think I like seeing that he went from a sort of low snap guy to leading the team – or sorry, second on the team to Kelce. And then obviously he rewarded the Chiefs for that with some big plays that helped them win the game. And so where do I see Rashee Rice? I think I can probably see him somewhere between the 6th and 7th. But that assumes a lot. That assumes that he continues to sort of marginally lead the team in snaps and routes. Like if you get to the playoffs, and in the playoffs, Rashee Rice is running like 90% of routes, is the clear number 2. I think that's a situation where he is probably in the 3rd round next year. But barring that, I'm thinking more like 6th round. And I'm pretty encouraged, just because he is somebody where he's a young player, and every time he's on the field, he performs. And
yeah,
I spent a lot of time talking there.
No. It's good, because it's good to hear that kind of perspective, right? Because thanks for pulling that up there, Blair. Like, his usage has been baffling, to say the least, right? This is a team that really needs a running mate to Travis Kelce. They've tried forcing it to everybody else. It seems, and it just felt like, you know, every time we get the ball to Rashee Rice, he does something well, and then they just forget about him for a while, right?
Well, yeah. Well, today they actually did play him quite a bit, so yeah. I'm encouraged by that.
Yeah, they did. His game today was definitely encouraging. His receiving FPO numbers, FPOE numbers have just been crazy. I mean, seven points over expected in week 7, 6.3 in week 9.
And he had 10 targets today.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, like there's only 32 targets on the team. He got 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm really encouraged. To me, that's showing all the signs for an emerging sort of breakout star.
Yeah, sure. And this is like, he's kind of coming into what we want Sky Moore to be, right? Like, and man, he's looked good. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, especially because like the Chiefs have stubbornly lost games because you know they just don't have you can't live. Subsist off of throwing the ball to Justin Watson 14 times. So I'm happy he stepped up. I have a lot of dynasty teams that needed him to step up, and those teams aren't particularly good. So I'm in a bit of a rebuild. So it's good to have him on those teams.
In terms of his like value next year, I think this game in particular was really huge because you know you can kind of see that he hasn't really done much, but still, you know, just based on the hype of being potentially Patrick Mahomes wide receiver one next year, could get him up pretty high. And now that I think people have seen he does have that ceiling, that's just going to solidify that kind of sentiment. So
I think it'll be important to sort of like see this going forward as well.
And I think we kind of will
continue leading,
right?
I think we will, right? Because Kadarius Toney's on IR. I believe Mecole Hardman's also on IR. So like, there's been a pretty rapid thinning out of that wide receiver core. But then also, you know, Richie James doesn't exist. You know, like they're probably going to see a lot more three wide receiver sets with Sky Moore, Justin Watson, and Rashi Rice. Right? So you're going to need some. Like, we just need to see more out of. I guess not necessarily see more out of him, but like hope this is a beginning of something to catapult, right? Because like he's going to be a pretty big guy. In your opinion, Draco, how much Rashi Rice do you have on your teams, and like do you think he can help take you home?
How many? So of my 11 currently advancing teams, I think he's one of my most owned players.
Let's go.
I have 4 Rashi Rice teams, so that's 36% of my currently advancing teams.
Nice. That's pretty big.
So that'll be really helpful.
Who's the guy that you really need to carry you over the finish line in these teams?
Who's the guy? My most owned player. My second most owned player is Devon Achane. So if he can turn it on for next week, that'd be pretty helpful. And then, unfortunately, my highest owned guy is Bryce Young. most of that's super flex. So, like, I'm not that upset about it. I think he's still, like, neutral there. I targeted him and, CJ Stroud a lot this year. And I wish I'd a little bit more CJ Stroud and a little bit less Bryce Young.
Right. Achane is a guy who's really kind of fun to think about in terms of his valuation next year, because obviously when he's been healthy and on the field, he's looked amazing, but he's small and the injuries kind of are keeping us from getting a really good look. I don't know. Do you think he can break into the first two rounds?
There's so much uncertainty. If you get like a late season and playoff run where he's amazing and like they use him a lot and he's scoring lots of points, then that could totally happen. Like you mentioned, there is an element of people who will say, you know, small player, easy to say, injury prone, and all that sort of stuff. Like, there's definitely still a bias against small running backs that could keep him out. So that's so hard to call, but I think it's definitely possible. Given him, so much of the story is left to be written. But is it like there's he really has to, I think, perform well and get a good snap share and all that sort of stuff for that to happen. What do you think? Because that is a hard one to think about, I think.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think I'll be excited to take him in the, I don't know, maybe in the late second, early third, assuming he comes back and is at all close to what we saw. Like, he doesn't have to have an amazing stretch. I think we've seen enough of his ceiling that if he comes back and is solid, that's enough to get me excited about him in at the
end. Yeah, of the second. Yeah, I agree there.
Yeah, I don't know if if it turns out that he's like, you know, obviously on this Dolphins team, these running backs can have big games. So if he has a few more, then I don't know. First round doesn't seem out of the question to me. I like the small backs, the small fast guys, so I don't have a problem necessarily with taking him there. But yeah, he's definitely an interesting guy because I don't really think we've seen a lot of guys his size have
that type of success.
That type of success. I mean, we've seen, you know, you think of, I mean, you got to go back to, like, I don't know, Danny Woodhead, maybe, to think of a guy who put up that kind of score, and he was not, you know, the next season, he wasn't a first round pick, I don't think. Yeah, it's hard to think.
He reminded me of Calvin, not Calvin Jones, Chris Johnson,
right?
Who I thought of, who is 203 pounds, whereas Devon is obviously smaller than that.
Right. Chris Johnson's a good one, and he actually, I believe, was a first round pick for at least a couple years. So probably not too crazy to think Achane could be a first rounder if he,
right,
if he comes back and is pretty special.
Right. Yeah, and I guess I should have been clearer in my like thing of like if he gets a good snap share and he plays really well and all.
Yeah, right.
That's what I was thinking, sort of first round, but I agree with you in that, like, if he shows anything at all, like, he's going to be an early pick next year.
Yeah. I think, I wonder, like, if the Dolphins decide, hey, this injury is kind of nagging, let's just keep him out for the rest of the season. Like, how excited are you for him fully healthy next year if he doesn't play again this year?
That's tough, right?
Yeah,
because in theory, you should be like excited that, like, okay, he had that injury. He must have fully worked through it now. Like, you should be getting fully healthy, Achane, to start the year. But then it's also like, okay, well, he did a little bit and then just completely disappeared. Yeah. The information I have is less. I've less information, even though I know that he's healthier. I think,
yeah, I mean, this hypothetical is pretty far fetched because the Dolphins are, you know,
right,
make a pretty deep playoff run. So, that would be a pretty serious injury if he were out for the rest of, you know, for however many games are left. So, you'd have to factor that into account. It wouldn't be, you'd be thinking about his injury in a much different way if this happened,
right? Yeah, I think you're sort of hinting that it's not. It's like almost not that important to think about as well, because it's unlikely.
Do you think they won't bring back Mostert?
What's the question?
Sorry. Do you think they won't bring back Mostert? They have a potential out in 2024, but his salary is fairly, I mean, it's still fairly low, right? Like, do you think they just won't bring him back?
Man, it's hard to think that Mostert's not giving them the value that they're paying for. But
yeah,
who knows?
So his 2024 season, his base salary goes up, or his base salary goes up from 1.2 to 2.4.
Yeah.
So it does. It's going up, but 2.4 for what they're getting feels pretty reasonable.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like it's fairly low for what, I mean. Can you? Yeah.
And at his age, not much leverage to get anything else. So.
Right.
No.
And it's only the 1 year left, so it's not like that they have like this big commitment. But the Dolphins will have cap issues next year. Mm-hmm. They will have to find savings in the back of the cushion next year. And that could be something where they're like, okay, you're like, we want to restructure this to a 2-year deal and all that sort of stuff. So you're gonna have to work with us. But like you said, he's older, so he might just agree to it.
Right, right. All right. Any other big news we need to discuss? There were a lot of people leaving games early in the early afternoon. I can't remember if there were any injuries that were serious.
Javonte suffered an injury, came back. DTR suffered an injury. They turned it over to PJ Walker. I can really think about
my my former co-host for Stat Chasing tweeted out a list of injuries to watch. Rashid Shaheed, he had a tie injury that he came out with. Olave had a concussion. Amari Cooper had a rib injury. And then Demario Douglas had a head injury. So of the groundbreaking fantasy football injuries, there you go.
Here's a good one. Not an injury. Jalen Hyatt had 109 yards on 5 receptions. Is it Jalen Hyatt season?
I hope so.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I mean, Giants winning games 10-7.
Hyatt's it's been interesting something. That DeVito has been serviceable. Like, he hasn't just been awful.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's
been like serviceable backup quality, where the offense still gets some yardage.
And he's definitely playing better than Daniel Jones was for a bit.
Did have, one good game, 3 touchdowns last week. But yeah, and this one, I don't know, no interceptions, and he was moving the ball. Getting Hyatt involved is nice. Would like to see more from Wandale, obviously, and more from Saquon. More than 10 points, but I'm encouraged that Hyatt is getting, getting yards and doing stuff even with the third string backup. It's hard to.
He's becoming an important player for them, which is good for a young player, and hopefully that the offense is good enough for him to have a meaningful breakout for the second half or late regular season playoff.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to think about what what you want to be doing with Giants players next year, just because there's not necessarily an easy way to see them making massive improvements on the offense since they're winning games.
Right. They're sort of locked into Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
You probably have a bit more clarity on who the starting skill position players are. That was one of the big, not really mystery or not intriguing for most people, but it was a big question mark where who was going to be the starting receiver for the Giants in 23. I don't think that's really a question in 24, where Wandale and Hyatt are the two main receivers.
Right.
And after that, you probably do have some questions, but not as relevant.
Right, right. All right. I think that will do it for us here. Thanks so much, Connor, for hanging out. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully get some more points from these Ravens, although I think the teams that Hassan and I were sweating are already dead. So
they definitely dead. It's a bit sad. Yeah. I did want to get you. I mean, like, it really has been a shame watching what has become of the Chargers.
Yeah. I don't know. I've got Herbert going in some leagues where I could use points from him, and you don't necessarily expect good games against the Ravens, but still expect something. Anyway, that'll do it for us. So thanks everyone for hanging out, and remember to like and subscribe and all that good stuff, and we will talk at you next week.